think little girls should be seen and not heard, but I think
class war.
Class war, the only war.
We want to just quickly send a nice friendly message to the Fraternal Order of Police in Philadelphia.
This is an anti-Nazi song.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to the Rebel Beat of Firebrand Records podcast. This is your monthly one-stop anti-shopping for class war on the dance floor, connecting music, radical politics, and movements for revolutionary social change. My name is Aaron. Thanks for being with us. We're taking things back to the roots on this episode and heading to the country. This month's episode is decidedly bluegrass and country focused, a first for us on the Rebel Beat. Our special guest on the show is Jeremy Paul, also known as Saltwater Hank. Jeremy is an indigenous Gitgat bluegrass artist from northern so-called BC in Canada. His music comes out of an unexpected place, coming from a heavy metal background himself. But we talked about his surprisingly easy transition from metal to bluegrass, indigenous environmental politics out west, and some of the stories that have inspired his creative ballads. Stay tuned for that. But first up, an issue that so many people have been talking about over the last week is the horrifying news of the Trump administration separating migrant children from their parents at the U.S. border and putting kids into migrant detention centers. Don't get me wrong, this is absolutely fucked up. The images are harrowing. But it's an important reminder that my country, Canada, does this too, and so do other Western countries. And the solution to this isn't creating more humane detention centers for migrants. It's about getting rid of detention centers altogether and recognizing they're just one evil part of the broader prison industrial complex. So we'll start you off with a couple anti-prison and anti-border bangers, first from Dead Prez and then from Propagandhi. Free them all.
Let's go, fellas. Shout time's up in 5 minutes. That's it. 5 more minutes and that's it. Back to work, fellas. Back to work.
Yo, little Khadija pops his lock. She wanna pop the lock. My prison ain't nothing but a private stock. And she be dreaming about his date of release. She hate the police, but loved by her grandma who hugs and kisses her. Her father's a political prisoner, free Fred. Son of a panther that the government shot dead back in 12-4-1969. 4 o'clock in the morning, it's terrible but it's fine. Cause Fred Hampton Jr. looks just like him, walks just like him, talks just like him. And it might be frightening the feds and the snitches to see him organized the gang, brothers and sisters, so he had to be framed, yo. You know how the game go, 18 years because the 5-0 said so. They said he set a fire to an A-Rap store, but he ignited the minds of the young, black, and poor. Behind enemy lines, my niggas are cellmates. Most of the youth never escaped the jail fate. Super maximum camps will advance their game plan to keep us in the hands of the man locked up.
Hello? Collect call from Ness. Where are you? Yo, shit is crazy, boy. Yo, I miss you. Yo, can you put some money in my commissary?
Lil Kenny been smoking Lucy since he was 12. Now he 25, locked up with an L. They call him Triple K, cause he killed 3 niggas. Another ghetto child got turned into a killer. His pops was a Vietnam veteran on heroin, used like a pawn by these white North Americans. Mama couldn't handle the stress and went crazy. Grandmama had to raise the baby, just a young boy, born to a life of poverty. Hustling, robbery, whatever brung the paper home. Carried the chrome like a blind man, hold a cane. Tattoos all over his chest so you could know his name. But y'all know how the game go. D's kicked in the front door, and guess who they came for? A young nigga headed for the pen. Coulda been, shoulda been, never see the hood again.
Behind enemy lines, my niggas are cellmates. Most of the youth never escape the jail fate. Super maximum camps will advance their game plan to keep us in the hands of the man. Locked up behind enemy lines, my niggas are cellmates. Most of the youth never escape the jail fate. Super maximum camps will advance their game plan to keep us in the hands of the man. Locked up.
Cuando yo llamo es como tú no me quieres escuchar. No he visto mis hijos, mi mujer. No me mandan retratos, no tengo dinero. Estoy aquí jodido en la cárcel, metido.
You ain't got to be locked up to be in prison. Look how we living. 30,000 niggas a day up in the bin. Standing routine, they put us in a box. Just like our life on the block.
Behind enemy
you ain't got to be locked up to be in prison. Look how we living. 30,000 niggas a day up in the bin. Standing routine, they put us in a box. Just like our life on the block.
Behind enemy lines.
They let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. I can do anything.
We're gonna build the wall. We have no choice. We have no choice.
Consensus. Give them license to benefit of the doubt. Is this a democratic process? What will this population out? I think my only fear is death. Is that it may not be the end. We may be eternal beings. I must do all of this again. Please don't let no such thing be true, though I suspect if I slink back to my enclosure, safe and warm and adequately lit, sufficiently plumbed and ventilated. Well, let's just say I would not shake a stick. And if pressed, I'll admit I'm ecstatic about the original programs implemented to extend our captive lifespans. I'm excited to see what our keepers have planned. Perhaps a bigger cage, longer chains, some compelling novel reasons to remain. Then are we gonna die? Yes, son, both you and I.
But maybe not today. Boys, I bowed to the keeper's whip for so damn long. I think the sad truth is this enclosure is where your old man belongs. But you, your hearts are pure when the operant conditioners come to break you in. I sink my squandered teeth. You grab your little brother's hand, run like the wind. And if I'm not there, don't look back, just go. I don't give a fuck about the original programs implemented to extend our captive lifespans.
motherfucker, come and get a load of what I got planned.
Welcome back to The Rebel Beat. We're a Firebrand Records podcast coming at you once a month. Make sure you check out Firebrand for their amazing roster of politically radical musicians at firebrandrecords.com. If you're not already subscribed to this podcast, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you like grabbing your podcasts. Hit the big subscribe button. It's the best way to never miss a Rebel Beat. Find us on social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or email us if you're old school at rebel@ckut.ca. We hope you like this podcast, and if you do like it, how about supporting it? Here's three simple ways you can do that. Leave us a rating or review. No matter where you download this podcast, you can just take 2 seconds and fill it out. Leave us 5 stars, leave us 1 star, write a little something. It doesn't matter, but whatever you do, it helps other people find the podcast. You can also retweet or share our episodes on social media, or better yet, tell a friend in real life about the Rebel Beat. And finally, support us on Patreon. Those of you who listen to a lot of podcasts, you're probably sick of hearing the same ads all the time. Mattresses that come in fancy boxes, meal kits, audiobooks. Well, you know what? We're doing your ears a favor by not bringing you any annoying sponsors on this show. Yes, you're very welcome for that. But producing this podcast isn't free, and there's always some expenses. Luckily, that's where your generous support comes in. You can sign up for as little as $1 a month, and I really do hope this show is worth at least $1 a month to you, by going to patreon.com/rebelbeatradio. I want to thank all of our new Patreon supporters who signed up over the last month. You know who you are, and you'll get a shout out at the end of this episode. And finally, The Rebel Beat is a proud member of the Channel Zero network of anarchist podcasts. You know, it's really interesting times, but also really scary times we're living in. Neo-Nazis are getting doxxed left, right, and center, and some of North America's most notorious neo-Nazi alt-right podcasters are running for their lives. That's why it's more important than ever to find and share anarchist podcasts and support other anarchist media. Channel Zero brings together over a dozen wicked anarchist podcasts all on one platform. We just added some amazing new ones, like the Black and Green podcast and Subversion 1312. Check them all out at channelzeronetwork.com, and here's just a little taste of what you might hear.
Too busy trying to survive capitalism's daily grind to get caught up on the latest anarchist news? Or maybe you're so wrapped up in your own organizing that it's hard to make time to hear about other liberatory struggles. This Rebel Girl has got you covered. Tune in every Wednesday for new episodes of The Hotwire, a 30-minute podcast with the latest anarchist news, on-the-ground interviews, a repression roundup, political prisoner birthdays, and announcements for upcoming events. All this and more at crimethink.com.
All right, so we're going to go now to our feature interview on the show today, and that's with Saltwater Hank. Saltwater Hank is the stage name of Jeremy Paul. Born in Prince Rupert, BC, and a member of the Gitgat community, Tsimshian folk artist Saltwater Hank resurrects stories of the land, lost, and absurd circumstance, and shines through them with a sepia lens, witnessing ageless characters with hearts and lives on the line. Saltwater Hank has a brand new album out now called Stories from the Northwest, reflecting a lot of fascinating histories from the land around where he grew up. The album has an old-school country feel and sound, but before starting his solo project, Jeremy played in a few other bands, perhaps most surprisingly a death metal band named Gabau. Gabau were really influential on the Canadian metal scene, particularly in indigenous communities, and sung all their songs in the Tsimshian language. So I caught up with Jeremy, or Saltwater Hank, to talk about his roots, his music, and the indigenous politics and storytelling that inspire him. We'll get to that interview in just a bit, but first, to warm us up, here's a new tune from Saltwater Hank's Stories from the Northwest. This is Moose Hunter Blues.
As I lay here tonight, my old spruce bough bed, thoughts of my darling going around in my head. And I haven't seen her in such a long time. I wonder if she still remembers she's mine. Now the weather is cold and the dog's getting poor. Gotta kill the moose, tomorrow's for sure. But today we set running a cow and a calf. They could hear us a-coming from a mile and a half.
Joining me on the line right now from Prince George in northern so-called BC, we've got Jeremy Paul, who is a multi-instrumentalist and currently performing under the moniker Saltwater Hank. We're going to be talking about that project and some of his other projects. He's an indigenous Gitkat musician, originally from Prince Rupert. And I'm really happy to have him on the Rebel Beat today. So welcome, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Maybe to begin, yeah, tell us a little bit more about yourself, your story, and kind of what brought you to making the music that you're making today.
Yeah, that's a long one, I guess. I've always kind of been fascinated with music from an early age, of like as long as I can remember. I think like my earliest memories of childhood have to do with like being fascinated with music, because my dad played, and he sang a lot of old country songs, and like my grandpa too, and a lot of people in the family. So it's kind of just like I've definitely like privileged and fortunate enough to be growing up in a family of musicians. But yeah, that's definitely had a lot of influence on what I'm doing now with the Saltwater Hank project, because I more or less was raised on the roots of country and folk. Mm-hmm. For sure. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really interesting because especially with the new project with Saltwater Hank, it's you hear a lot of like country, folk, even bluegrass influences in there. But
previously to that, you were playing in a metal band, so completely different sound. Tell us about, and this is a really interesting metal band because it was an indigenous metal band. You guys were singing in an indigenous language. So tell us about that project.
Right, yeah. So that was a project called Gabau. It was that word in Somalic means wolf, which was the name was inspired by a story that our grandpa told us when we were young. My cousin and I, who is the drummer in the band, who's also Tim Sien from Gitgat. But yeah, our grandpa told us a story about, like, you know, basically it was like kind of like a boogeyman sort of story when we're kids who, you know, if you're messing around, the Gabau is going to come from the mountains and eat you right up. But yeah, so I don't know why that inspired our name, but it did. But that project had a 6-year time span. We started in 06 and played our final farewell show in 2012. And, you know, during that time, we toured all around Western Canada. Well, yeah, we toured Canada and South America and had a great time doing it.
Wow. But, so, yeah. You guys went all the way to South America.
Yeah, we played we spent a month down there and played a lot of shows and did it over 4 countries. And yeah, that was a really cool experience.
Nice. Sure. One thing that I'd be really, curious to ask you is, like, I'm not much of a metalhead myself. I think I can really appreciate the music, but I just didn't grow up with it. And maybe metal fans of this show are going to be annoyed at me asking this question, but I think, like, metal sometimes, like, gets a bad rap because there is, like, that element of, like, white supremacy, like, neo-Nazi bands coming out of Norway or other parts of the world as well. And obviously, like, those bands don't speak for, you know, all of the metal scene, which is a huge global movement. But I'm just curious, you know, like, you were playing in a metal band, like, you know, singing in an indigenous language with other indigenous people. And I'm just wondering, like, if you ever came up against those kind of hateful messages in the scene, or yeah, like, what was it like for you guys positioning yourselves vis-a-vis the rest of metal?
For sure. Like, it was, there is, like, a really strange, like, social scene. You know, there's a lot of posturing and imagery, I think, in the metal scene. A lot of, people sort of going with the flow of what is extreme. You see that especially in the black metal scene, which we were definitely lumped into that category of, like, the black metal. And, you know, there's a lot of extremists in that scene, of course, a lot of fascists. But we had like both sides of the coin coming at us. So we would get, like, you know, like, white supremacists and Nazis from the scene posting about us online, never to our face, of course, but posting online about, you know, like indigenous people don't belong in black metal. Black metal is not for people of color or of diverse ethnicities. So there is that extreme side of things. And then the most confusing part about it all was having like fascist fans,
right,
of us, which was, like, you know, there's people that would come out after a show and, you know, shake our hand, you know, say, like, that was an amazing set, you guys are great. And then, you know, you look over your shoulder and they're just, like, chatting it up with some dude that's covered in swastikas, you know, on his jacket, tattoos, you know, that sort of thing. So it's, wow, like, it was really confusing, for sure.
So, I mean, it's amazing how, like, the music that you're playing today is completely different than Gabao. So tell us, like, how you kind of made that transition to now be playing more in the vein of country and bluegrass.
Right, yeah. I think it's a much more natural transition than folks would think. I've run into a lot of bluegrass players that used to play metal, and it's like, I mean, with bluegrass, especially, it's really, you just turn off the distortion on like a ripping thrash metal solo, and it's just a bluegrass solo, essentially. You're just playing in a minor key instead of a major key.
Wow.
It's just as fast. It's just as furious of picking, lots of alternate picking, whatever. But yeah, it's really funny. And there's a lot of like, there's a movement I noticed like that started about like 8 or 10 years ago or something, of a lot of crust punks moving over to bluegrass, who, you know, as like, that's also a super fast paced genre of music.
Yeah.
So yeah, it makes sense to me.
I'm curious, have you ever seen that video kind of went viral of the bluegrass band doing a cover of Thunderstruck, AC/DC's Thunderstruck?
Oh yeah, you see Dixie.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that for sure.
So it's funny because you just made me think of that, and I think I'm never going to like hear bluegrass and metal the same way again now that you've planted the seed of them being linked.
You've been thunderstruck.
In recent years, you've also played with this other really great, more kind of like folk rock project called Black Spruce Bog. Tell us a little bit about that band.
Right. So that one, we started in 2013, I think. We were only around for like 3 years. That was kind of like, we just like, started playing together. I just like met Eric and Amy at it was like a CBC house party sort of thing, and we jammed and then ended up, you know, like exchanging contacts, hanging out and doing that thing. But and then I was playing with Danny Bell, who has played drums in Black Spruce Bog. He like drummed on a previous country sort of project that I had called Saltwater Brothers. And then yeah, you know, all of us had come together and did some touring, threw out a couple of albums, and yeah, I mean, that project was really great. It was like pretty like well organized. We had like a manager and everything like that, but yeah, it was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Nice playing.
Because it's really interesting the way that you guys approach like the theme material and the songs. Some of them definitely touch on indigenous issues or environmental issues. But what I was wondering is like, how does your identity as an indigenous person kind of weave its way in to the music that you're playing these days, or with Black Spruce Bog?
Yeah. Hmm. I guess it's like, there's always like to do with the stories that are, you know, passed down through generations in indigenous culture. I especially like with the where I'm from, like Northwest Coast, there's always a lesson or some kind of point that is meant to be achieved. And that, you know, that goes for like stories everywhere. But I found especially with, I mean, I'm only really familiar with like stories from the Northwest Coast. I mean, I know some others, but like, that's what I'm most familiar with. And it's always like a really interesting way of of getting a point across, especially with like, especially with trickster stories, which are like my favorite ones, where, you know, like the trickster, the raven, finds themselves in really precarious situations because of appetite. So like, yeah. And like, so that definitely influences my songwriting, today. I would say for sure. I try to interweave story with some kind of like usually political undertone, mm-hmm. I would say.
And I mean, your music does that so well, and it for sure, it's really reflective of that area of the Northwest, which I have only had the pleasure of visiting up there once. I want to come back again and talk about that in just a little bit. But first, tell us a little bit about just how you made that transition from Black Spruce Bog to now. Is it right to say it's more kind of a solo project with Saltwater Hank?
Yeah, I mean, it was like the project started just before Black Spruce Bog dissolved, essentially. And like we had talked about it, and like I was like, well, I better do something if this band is going to be gone, because I had a lot of time. All of us had a lot of time invested in that band, and then had to, you know, each of us had to prepare for something new. So that's really all it was, but it's like definitely, I would say, like a solo project. Like I write all of the things and arrange all of the things. Yeah.
We can't have you tearing up the earth, and we won't have you poisoning our soil. We'll keep our clean water. You can keep your dirty oil.
All right, I wanted to talk a bit more specifically about some of your songs, both from Black Spruce Bog and from the new Saltwater Hank album, because like you're saying, there's some amazing storytelling happening on there. So kind of wanted to go like, you know, behind some of the songs a little bit to learn more about them. So one of my favorites from the Black Spruce Bog album is Dirty Oil. And I was actually thinking about this a lot because I actually just got back from the Coast Salish territories in Vancouver, had a chance to go to the Kinder Morgan anti-pipeline camp up on Burnaby Mountain there. And of course, the last time I was in kind of northwestern BC, I was at the Unistoten camp, where, you know, just for our listeners who don't know, that's Indigenous territory where they're trying to block, I believe it's like 7 different oil pipelines from going through the territory. Anyways, this has been a long preamble, but it's just to say that this is clearly, you know, a huge issue, is this issue of oil and how people are contesting it. So tell us a little bit more about that song, Dirty Oil.
Keep our clean water. Your dirty oil.
Yeah, that song came out of, it was actually the first, like, I guess you'd call it like folk-esque song that I ever wrote. And, it was almost a decade ago that I wrote that tune. And it was because everything surrounding the proposed Northern Gateway pipeline was sort of like blowing up and making a lot of, you know, Northwest BC very upset, and including myself. So, I mean, that it was really inspired by then, but like, you know, it's I still play it sometimes today, because I feel like, you know, like you just said, like there's still a lot of things going on, you know, with the Kinder Morgan, and you know, Ogden Stoughton is always having to evict workers from their traditional territory, and like, yeah, the fight is not over. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Another song off of that album, Black Spruce Bog, is a really powerful one about residential schools. It's called The Indian Agent. Tell us about that tune.
Right. That tune was written by Raghu Lokanathan, who is a fantastic Prince George songwriter, Prince George based. He actually used to live in Montreal too, and like his songs, like every, like so many people sing them without even knowing it. Like, are you familiar with Corin Raymond?
No, I never heard of him.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's like Toronto folk singer, but okay. Yeah, like he plays Raghu's songs. But anyways, Raghu was working at a youth shelter, which in downtown Prince George, which I also worked at. And he was working with a woman there who was from Lac La Lams, which is one of the Tsimshian villages near Prince Rupert. And yeah, she told him that the story about the Indian agent coming to her place, and like every word in that song is a true event. And yeah, I know Raghu ended up asking her if he could use the story to make a song, and she was into it. And actually the woman who told the story, I used to work with her at that youth shelter as well, like quite often. So yeah, like definitely a heavy tune. I think it's one of Raghu's best.
The Indian agent came. He wore a suit and tie. I'd only ever seen that in the movies. My mother was fixing food as I crawled around the house. My brothers were out running in the fields. The Indian agent knocked. He stepped inside the door. My mother ran up to him, fell on her knees. She said, I swear to you by God, I don't know where they are. Both good boys, I taught them how to read. The agent looked around, saw me on the stairs, said, why, what's that pretty baby's name? Then he reached into his coat, pulled out his little book, licked his finger, flipped to an empty page. He started lining up towards me at the top, when suddenly he slid and fell face down. 'Cause my brothers had come back and seen him watching me. They grabbed his ankles, pulled out both his feet.
I'm wondering, like, how people respond to that song when you play it. I imagine it really strikes a chord with people.
For sure. Yeah, it is one of those tunes that, like, I mean, I have recently incorporated it into, like, my own live sets from time to time. Yeah, it's definitely, like, I know last time I played it, there was a couple of people crying in the audience, for sure. Like, yeah, pretty emotional song.
Yeah. We'll go to your new album, Saltwater Hank. It's called Stories from the Northwest. And, of course, we're talking about all these different stories from the Northwest. And the song on there that I'm really interested in is actually a tune called Old Hazleton. I believe it's the closing track. And I discovered it because I was recently hanging out with some friends who live in Hazleton. And they were like, oh, yeah, this guy Saltwater Hank, he just wrote this really interesting ballad about the city. And it is, or a town, I guess. so it's kind of a ballad, I guess, if we could call it that, about a man on the run. You also have a video. It's kind of like almost like a live video performance of this song. So tell us about Old Hazleton.
So that song was inspired by the story of Simon Gunnanoo, who he was around over 100 years ago. That's where like the story really takes place. And he was a Gitxan man who was a trapper and a fur trader and had a storefront and a ranch. And he was in a barroom scuffle, which ended in the other guy, who is a gold prospector, being walking off into the night and being found dead the next morning via a gunshot wound. And he was like Simon Gunnanoo was the last person to be seen with this guy, and was believed that there was a motive for killing him. So he was, he got wind of this, of course, and then took off into the woods where he lived for 13 years and evaded the capture of bounty hunters and the RCMP and all kinds of people. But managed to survive on the run for quite some time, and was eventually somehow acquitted of all his charges. I don't know how that happened, because at the time if you were an indigenous person, you couldn't hire a lawyer. So I don't know. I actually don't know that part of the story of how he was actually acquitted, but he was, and he ended up living out the rest of his days in the Hazleton area. And it was found out later I know that Simon Gunnanoot's sister-in-law ended up telling people she was pretty close to her death, but she let everybody know that she was actually the one that killed this gold prospector, because he had attempted to rape her. So she was waiting for him after the bar and fixed him up with her rifle.
Wow.
So it turned into quite the story in northern BC. Like, I did some digging through newspaper archives and things like that to find a little bit more inspiration and get a sense of what was really what the media was portraying at the time, because it was and what I found is quite the Wild West situation. It's this Indian is on the run, and it was portrayed as we got to get him.
There's horses in the stable. They're outfitted with tag. Gotta take what I can, 'cause I know I can't come back. From the waters of the Skeena, been up to Telegraph Creek. Try as they will, they won't find the soul. Death of me. Oh, I've gotta leave Old Hazleton before the law finds me.
I guess maybe to kind of wrap things up a bit, who are some musicians that have inspired you in your work, whether they be musicians who are still making music today or musicians who have passed?
If I was gonna pick, the dead ones, definitely like Jimmy Rogers, the singing brakeman, the Kosoy sisters, who are like super, like amazing, like vocal harmonies and have like a super great sound. They're like early bluegrass kind of thing. And yeah, Bill Monroe is also great. Hank Williams Sr. I love all those like old greats. But like as far as like recent, like I feel really like really privileged to be able to go around and travel and meet new musicians and friends everywhere I go, and tour with people who are also like equally as inspiring as the bluegrass and country and folk musicians of many years ago. But yeah, if I were going to name one that's like going to influence my songwriting, just, I don't know, by like hanging out with them, it's definitely Simone Schmidt of The Highest Order and Fiverr. And like playing with Simone and talking to her about songwriting, like really just like flipped my perspective quite a bit. Like I used to just write songs and they would just come to me and whatever. And like, I was a pretty lazy songwriter. I would just play a song and like make chords and a melody and there you go, like out in the world. Where like Simone really digs into everything to do with the song and how every single part of everything serves the lyrics. And I learned that like playing with her, I was like playing mandolin and we were just like jamming stuff out before touring, and I was like, I don't know, just like picking along, and she was like, why don't you just like take a step back, think about what you're playing and how it can serve to support the lyrics of the song and invoke the mood of that. Because like here I was just like, it was like a super somber song and I'm like just going within the bluegrass box on the mandolin going like beep 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 beep. That's not doing it any justice at all. So it like completely changed how I viewed the mechanics of a song. And just like, yeah, I mean, she's such an incredible lyricist, and you know, so many things good things could be said about Simone as an artist and a songwriter, but she's definitely been like a super great influence in recent times.
For sure. Yeah. We are huge Fiverr fans here on the Rebel Beat. And if people haven't heard that album, Audible Songs from Rockwood, people should definitely check it out. I kind of see you guys doing really similar things in a certain sense to not only because of the genre of music you're playing, but also because of the way you guys are reviving these old stories and putting that research work in. Like, that's something that's always really impressed me about Simone's method of digging deep through archives, like through old letter boxes and stuff like that, to pull out this history, which is like really vital, if we want to call it Canadian history, that usually doesn't get taught in schools, that we should all know, and presenting that in musical form. So yeah, I really see you guys as doing similar things, and I really appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. And like, yeah, she does amazing work with that. Like, I couldn't imagine the amount of work that had gone into that album. It's an unreal album, that one.
Definitely. So again, we've been chatting with Jeremy Paul, a.k.a. Saltwater Hank. People can find your music up online through your website, saltwaterhank.com. And lastly, what are some of your upcoming plans?
This is the edge of festival season. So I'm going to be I'm going to be playing a whole bunch of festivals across BC and just doing a few little mini tours between now and then. As far as writing goes, I am going to be writing a record that working with a language keeper in Tsimshian territory. And we're going to make a country western record with the lyrics in Tamalgach.
Oh, that's amazing.
So that's going to be the next one that I'm going to do.
And how long do you think that'll be before that comes out?
Probably like I'll do all the writing this year, and I would anticipate like a spring 2019 release for that.
Awesome. Once again, we've been speaking with Saltwater Hank, Jeremy Paul, on the line with us today from Prince George. Thanks so much for being on the Rebel Beat.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me, for sure.
Recompense me for all my pains and all my sorrows. cash going all around, singing all that's lost in good time will be found again. In her hand held she an ivory copper, outstretched it and his way on offer. My portrait painted on the lid, so clearly meant for me, singing all that's lost in good time will be found again. All that's lost in good time will be found again. I loosed the lash, I flipped the hand, and light spilled forth over everything. The shape of the cover grew deeper than words, and I strained my eyes to look inside. And the sight I saw was hard to tell, but all lay quite familiar. Lost in good time will be found again.
Welcome back to The Rebel Beat, a podcast on music and radical politics. We just heard an interview there with Jeremy Paul, aka Saltwater Hank, and then he heard the tunes Fish Cannery from Saltwater Hank, as well as Hair of the Dead by Fiverr. If you haven't checked out Fiverr's album, Audible Songs from Rockwood, yet, press pause on this podcast now, drop what you're doing, and listen to it. As we round down the show, it's time for our Turn It Up segment. That's, of course, our segment every show where we look at an artist, musician, band who are using their platform for radical social change. And on this month's segment, we're going to pay tribute to Jalal Mansour Nuruddin of The Last Poets, who passed away at the beginning of June at the age of 74. Sometimes known as the grandfather of rap, Nuruddin was the founding member of The Last Poets, a legendary Black Power group that formed in Harlem, New York in the late 1960s. Heavily influenced by soul, poetry, jazz, and thinkers like Malcolm X, their sound was truly pioneering. Basically, all the foundational hip-hop artists have listed The Last Poets as one of their main influences. Their sound was simple yet deep. Percussion, rhythm, words, and incantations to rebel. Thank you, Jalal, for all the inspiration and your devotion to the struggle. We'll leave you with one more from The Last Poets, but before we go, I'd like to thank all of our supporters on Patreon: Donald, Sarah, Matt, Dan, Zachary, Ryan, Misha, Aaron, Ross, Camilo, DJ Kill McKinley, Scott, Philip, Moti, David, Sasha, Megan, Hunter, Lee, Russell, Sarah, Rose, Justine, Yannick, Andy, Frank, and Andrew, and Sol. We'll be back next month. My name is Aaron. Thanks for listening.
Committed one sin, they stood up like men and got ice for just being a man.